Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Julio Canto. Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto talking to you from Dallas, Texas on December 19th, and we're getting slowly but surely we're getting close to that Christmas day, and well, that's something to be excited about because we've got family and things like that that we can do. I can tell you that on Friday, December 21st, we're going to get into a very interesting direction. We're going to talk about with a fellow named Rick Johnson, and we spoke with him a few months ago. And Rick has a great organization that he heads in the West Coast, and it's an organization called Better Dads. And what they do is they work with fathers like me who have sons, and we try to work on how to be a better dad, how to relate and work better with your sons. And I think it's an interesting topic given the reality that we're coming into a season now, which is a season of family. And the other thing, of course, that Rick Johnson does is that he works with a lot of single mothers who are raising sons, and he works with them, his organization works with them in giving them some ideas, some tips on how to raise boys. And, of course, that's one of the challenges of our time, the number of kids who are growing up in broken families and the consequences that it has. It's a very serious problem, and one that I believe, even though we don't want to look to government for solving this problem, because I think it is more of a people problem, something we have to do as a nation, but nevertheless, maybe government has a role to play in that, and certainly we as men and women in our society have a role to play. And with Christmas coming up, I thought it would be interesting to talk to Rick and see what we can do to make our country a little bit more focused on this whole question of fathers and sons and families and so on. So that'll be on Friday, December 21st, and that'll be our last show pretty much for the year, and then we'll come back toward the end. I think the 28th is the next show that we're going to do. And then, of course, we've got Iowa right after that, so we'll have a lot to do in 2008, as we get into the politics. Now, today we're gonna talk about a couple of things. Our first guest, who will be joining us in a few minutes, is someone that all of you know quite well. Media Lizzie is her name, her nickname, but she's Elizabeth Blackney, and she, of course, is not only a talk show host here in the network, but also has a couple of books. She has a book and another one that she's working on, so she's a very interesting lady, very interesting pundit, and somebody that we want to talk to. And then toward the end of the show, we're going to bring in our friend Rick Moran, and he's been writing a couple of really interesting posts on his website about the possibility of a brokered convention where we basically get to wherever. I forgot where the Republicans are holding their convention. Is it Philadelphia? I don't remember right now where they're holding the convention, but the possibility that we're going to get to a convention and find out that, no one has enough delegates, and we have to sit down and try to broker a deal between all the different groups. I still think the possibility of that happening is less than 50%, but you never know. You never know, especially with what you're seeing in the primaries right now, with McCain going up, with Thompson, looks like he's going up. You got Huckabee, the Huckabee factor. You've got Giuliani. You've got Romney. I mean, you got a lot of players. And as of right now, no one seems to be the choice of any more than maybe 30% of the Republicans. So we'll see. We'll see. Again, as I think it's a very interesting concept. It's something that could happen, and if it does happen, obviously, it'll be very entertaining to watch, to say the least. And what's interesting about it is, and we'll talk to Rick about this later on, what's interesting about it is that actually it used to be this way. We used to have conventions. This is the way they used to be. Really, I guess back maybe before World War II, we used to have conventions like this. I can't think of any recent history, perhaps 1952, when Eisenhower was selected by the Republicans. That may have been a good example of this, but certainly not since then. Most of the time, we've kind of known by July or June or July who the nominee is going to be. Once in a while, you'll have a situation like Reagan and Ford in 76. I think everybody knew that Ford would be the nominee, but Reagan took it down to the convention, and I remember that, watching that on TV. In fact, they rerun that, some of the events out of that convention. They rerun them once in a while on C-SPAN. They're very interesting to watch. But I think that was the last time that anything close happened in a convention. Pretty much they've all been pretty standard, pretty academic since that particular convention of 1976. And before that, of course, I don't remember this one, but before that, it would have been 1952, maybe the last time that there was anything close to a convention without a leading candidate. I think we have our friend Elizabeth on the phone. Are you with us?
I am indeed.
Well, happy Christmas and welcome to our show. It's always so much fun to talk to you.
Well, happy Christmas to you and your guests and your listeners. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I always, as I said, always like to touch base with you every once in a while because you have so many interesting things to say. But I saw on your website that you're working on a second book. Now, that's interesting. Tell us about that.
Well, I am. Actually, I've got lots of books on my plate. I am. Earlier this year, I founded a boutique publishing house called TMK Books. And mine was the first book out of the queue. We've got another book out of the queue by an author out of California called The New Conservative Paradigm. He's a Republican, the vice chairman of the Republican Party in California. And so I've published his book. And then there are several others. We're going to open a fiction division and a children's division in 2008. And we're going to the London Book Fair. And we've got lots going on. It's really, really exciting.
Well, that's great. So you're an entrepreneur as well as a publisher.
I am indeed.
Oh, that's great. Now, you know, I've always, maybe you can explain this to us, I've always been fascinated about how do you actually publish a book? Maybe take us to two or three steps of how do you actually do that? I have no idea.
Well, it's can be complicated, but it's a lot of fun. It's very difficult. You know, the traditional way is to wait in line and, you know, get a book agent or an intellectual property attorney who can help facilitate the process with a publisher. You know, we accept manuscripts, but I prefer things that, you know, have agents on them just because it kind of tends to weed out the bad writers from the good. And once you get into the process itself, once, say, you get a publisher to agree to publish your book, it's really a lot of fun. You know, you develop the marketing around it, and you figure out what your audience is, and you work on your demographics. And, you know, it's like any other business. It's a lot like, you know, television advertising and trying to find the right market to market the book to. But it's great fun. You register your ISBNs, and you register with the Library of Congress, and you know, it's a lot of fun, though. It's an interesting process. It's nice to have a book out there because then there's, you know, something to leave your children and grandchildren that's real.
No, you're exactly right. You know, when you do something like that, you leave something for people after you to read. At least, you know, you will forever be sitting on a coffee table, right? You
that's
know,
right.
The book on the coffee table for future generations. So I think it's great, and I congratulate you on taking on projects like that. You know, let me just ask you about what's going on. I mean, a lot of exciting things are happening in Iowa. I think the last time you mentioned to me you were supporting Fred Thompson. Are you still doing that?
Well, yes and no. I because of the TMK business, my publishing business, I'm really more focused on building kind of a more global dialogue and focused on issues more than I am the presidential campaigns. But now, don't get me wrong, I still talk about politics every day. But, you know, I haven't done any, I decided to not do fundraising for Thompson or for any of the candidates. I think that his campaign has got some of the most seasoned operatives on it, but they have, you know, kind of run a, they haven't communicated as well as I think they should have with the American public and certainly with voters in Iowa and South Carolina. And while he still does well in some parts of the country, it's really important for them to, you know, he should have had more than one outstanding debate performance.
And, yeah, I think you're right. I agree with you.
Yeah, with just 2 weeks to go, you know, it's still wide open. The truth of the matter is that none of the candidates are performing well on the Republican side of the aisle. Not one of them. None of them have captured the American imagination. I think Mike Huckabee has, you know, has probably reached his peak. He may win Iowa still, but that's not, that's less about him and more about how the rest of the field is not exciting. And, you know, I think that there are some, you know, Thompson remains my favorite just because I think he would be, make the best president. The problem for Thompson is that you also have to be the best candidate. And if you're not the best candidate, then you're probably not going to win the nomination and thus never have the opportunity to be the president of the United States. It's an unfortunate, you know, circumstance, but nonetheless, that's where we are. Now, I would say that I think, you know, Mitt Romney is probably dumping in enough millions to win the nomination. He is far from being my favorite in the Republican field. I'd rather have John McCain or, you know, I don't know that Rudy Giuliani has proven that he has got the gravitas to be president of the United States. He seems to have thin skin, and he overreacts publicly every time there's even the thinnest criticism. And so, you know, it's really important that we, you know, that the voters have someone to believe in, and I don't think anyone on the Republican side of the aisle has captured that, you know, Republicans are really tired of being the bad guys, and, you know, there's political fatigue and war fatigue, and I think Republicans, you know, I say often on my show that, you know, Americans just want to fall in love again. We want to be fall in love with our country again. You know, everyone feels kind of downtrodden right now, and the Democrats have Barack Obama, and he's really the only candidate in either party who's talking about something hopeful.
Well, that's an interesting assessment. I was going to ask you about the Democrats as well. How do you see, I guess you kind of answered the question, but how do you see the Democrat race?
I think Barack Obama has a real chance to be the nominee. I think that Hillary Clinton was running on inevitability and entitlement, and even Democratic voters are turned off by that. I think her strength early in this race was based entirely on the fact that she and her husband had the most favors owed to them politically. And they were calling in all of the owed favors with all of their on-the-ground troops. And so they forced loyalty because people owed them. And now that we're getting down to where people actually vote, her, you know, her support is very soft because she's not offering, you know, what people were hoping she would offer. Her biggest problem is not that that Bill Clinton is her husband, it's that she's not Bill Clinton. You know, Democrats miss him, nobody misses her. You know, is she smart? Yeah, is she ambitious? Absolutely. But her experience, you know, being someone's wife doesn't qualify you to be the commander-in-chief.
No, that's right. You're exactly right. She seems to have a lot of support, but it seems to me when I watch these people on TV, even when I've seen some of these question and answer sessions that the candidates have with voters, there just doesn't seem to be that much passion for her. There's a lot more passion, as you said, for Obama. I'm not sure about
Edwards. For Edwards.
Yeah, even yeah. Edwards. Yeah, there just doesn't seem to be any real passion for.
Well, you know, here's an interesting thing. In 2004, after the election, and in early 2005, there was a study done of all of the campaign language that came out from the Bush-Cheney campaign and that came from the Kerry Edwards campaign. And the American people always go with whoever uses the most hopeful language. Well, John Kerry and John Edwards' campaign language was so negative. It was everything that was wrong with America. You know, it was certainly they said, well, you know, but we can fix it. But they didn't offer, you know, an alternative for hope. And George Walker Bush and Dick Cheney, people can say what they want, but Dick Cheney and George Bush were more hopeful. You know, George Bush, when he gets out on the campaign trail, is the happiest warrior there's ever been. And so because they used the, you know, it's not happy talk, but just positive language about the country, people don't want to be told that their country sucks and that, you know, and that if they're not doing it one person's way, then, you know, they're not good enough. People want to be told that America is the best country in the face of the earth, and here's where we're going next. And, you know, Hillary Clinton uses that entitled, you know, everything that's wrong with George Bush, everything that's wrong with American language. And, you know, John Edwards went negative early in Iowa, and he, you know, he went from first to third, and that's where he stayed. he's got a core of, you know, very supportive people. But will he, you know, will enough folks be wooed back into his column? I don't think so. I'm willing to bet that Barack Obama wins big time because he's going to be everybody's second choice. You know, in Iowa, if you don't make the 15% cut, then you go in the next round and vote for whoever your second choice is. And I think that Barack Obama is going to probably be everyone's second choice and end up being the first choice.
Yeah, but what happens to Obama? You know, I understand what you're saying about the language of hope and all of that. You're exactly right. But what happens to Obama, though, once he gets more into the general election? Because, or let's say when he has to start moving a little bit to the center, isn't he going to turn off some of those college students that seem to be so in awe with him? Or
I don't
even,
think so.
No, you think
I don't think so, because we don't have a Republican nominee that he could run against that has a message that is equally as powerful. And that's the problem, is that the most voters do not make their decision until the final 30 days of a campaign. So for those of us who eat, sleep, live, and breathe the political life, we are paying attention to every nuance from every campaign, every moment of every day. But most voters don't decide until the final 30 days. You know, we've got 10 million people who make the decision, and, you know, and they're not even paying attention yet, and they won't be paying attention. And it's, you know, in 2004, the edge in the popular vote that the president had over John Kerry was 3 million. So if you figure 10 million people are making their decision within the last 3 to 4 weeks of the campaign, all of the stuff that everyone else argues about really is moot. It helps to drive the news coverage of what arrives in there when they start paying attention. But it doesn't necessarily change what they're going to see. And, you know, Mitt Romney has flip-flopped on every issue. And Barack Obama will be able to say, I've always stood for X, and I believe in the country, I believe in our future, and, you know what you get with me. You know, he's very, you know, we can't accuse him of soft-pedaling or going back and forth. Now, if he makes a misstep, then certainly everybody can exploit that for what it's worth, but you have to offer more than what's wrong with Obama. There, you know, none of our candidates have said why what's right with them. Mitt Romney hasn't, Rudy Giuliani has not, Fred Thompson has not, John Edwards, you know, on the left has not made that, and that's why he's not first or second. So, you know, our candidates are going to have a really hard time attacking Barack Obama when they haven't said what they're about yet.
Well,
no, 9/11 isn't enough.
No, but Barack Obama has not, and I think you're right, a lot of people are not paying attention, but once you get into debates and you start talking about national security and what Barack Obama is going to do, I just don't think that the country's ready to elect someone as inexperienced, particularly at this time. At least that's my view. That's where I think
Well,
Obama,
and you would hope so. I totally agree with you. I think that the American people are very concerned about his level of experience. But, you know, all of our candidates have not proven on the right that they've got more to offer. And, you know, the place that our candidate, whoever our nominee is, will really be able to shine is in the presidential debates next October.
Yeah,
and as long as that person is really well prepared, they will be able to, you know, without being insulting of Barack Obama, you know, reveal that he just doesn't have quite enough gravitas, you know, for the job. I mean, you got to have your big boy pants on to be the president of the United States right now.
Well, I don't
think
being
shiny isn't enough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really. I mean, I agree with you. Without insulting Obama, just getting him into a debate and getting Obama to answer some questions will go a long way. I agree with you. You don't have to insult him. But now, I just saw a poll today, and then I want to ask you another question. I just saw a poll today from New Hampshire. McCain is like 27, Romney something like 31. McCain is really coming up.
John McCain, it's amazing. You know, first of all, I always believe that the press, you know, they want that tight race. They want that big narrative. And you know, a lot of folks on the right attack the press, but they really do know how to give us what we want. Americans love a narrative. We love a story that makes us, that engages us. And I think John McCain proving yet again that he, you know, he's got that staying power. You know, he may pull it out, and those people in New Hampshire loved him in 2000. And, you know, he may very well, you know, emerge. Now, as a Bush person, it's really hard for me to get over South Carolina 2000. And I know John McCain won that argument. Everybody feels so bad about the mean Bush people. But, you know, his campaign did a lot of dirty tricks, and, you know, I remember when, during the debate, how that went. So, but I will say, John McCain has got some of the most seasoned folks on his team, his senior economic advisors, his staff, all over the country are people who really love the country. And McCain has got to find a way to ignite that, you know, what's good about America thing. And he's really the only person who's got the narrative in the Republican side of the aisle, but he's got to find a way to capture that magic that he had in 2000 again.
Well, if you watch, and I'm sure you've seen it, but there's a great video of John McCain and his website of when he was captured and what he went through. That video is unbelievable. I saw it this morning again.
Yeah.
And you talk about a narrative. You talk about, you know, a man who believes in duty.
Yes.
I think that video can really play well. So,
I think he's the only one who could beat Barack Obama, because Barack Obama is like the second coming of JFK and RFK for the people on the left. And the folks on the right, we have to be just as energized or more about our nominee. And that means we have to have someone who has a powerful message and a powerful life story that we can really relate to and get behind. The only person who's got that story is John McCain.
Oh, I agree.
But they haven't sold that story this time around.
Well, not yet, not yet. I mean, that could come later. But, you know, one thing about JFK, I mean, I understand the JFK myth, but he barely won the election in 1960, so sometimes, you know, the myth and the reality there about the JFK.
Yes, but it's not just the campaign JFK that I'm talking about.
No, you're talking about the myth, yeah.
I'm talking about the president, and he had an entire generation of people who believed in him. You know, he was bold. He believed in the strong defense. He believed in things that made a difference for an entire generation of people who romanticized him. You know, it's not just the campaign JFK is far less interesting than the man who said we're going to the moon and then did it in 7 years.
No,
you know,
you're right. You're right about
proud
that.
Out of his mouth. And so Barack Obama has that magic quality. And, you know, magic, you know, John F. Kennedy, you know, he was also a bona fide war hero, swimming across for hours and hours and hours to save the men on PT-109. So, you know, he was already a legend in many ways long before he was an average candidate. But his life story was compelling. And John McCain has the ability to ignite that, but he's got to look, you know, vigorous and like he wants it.
Yeah. Well, no question about it. I always say, whatever happened to the JFK Democrats? Because it was a totally different party, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
It was
absolutely
a totally different party.
And we've got, you know, the Republican Party's a lot different than it was pre-Goldwater. So, you know, we're no longer the party of Lincoln in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to thank you very much for participating. In fact, we're going to be talking to Rick Moran next. He's going to talk about a post. Maybe you saw it, but I'd like to get your thoughts on this. He wrote a post about a brokered convention, sort of. A fictional convention where everybody shows up and nobody's got a majority of the delegates, and we're going to be talking to him about that. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think that that is an outside possibility. I do think that because there isn't anybody with magic on the Republican side of the aisle, that we could all go to Minneapolis not knowing who our nominee is going to be. I mean, there generally could be a floor fight. And it just depends on how Super Tuesday goes, because, you know, the number of delegates that you get out of Iowa and New Hampshire is nothing compared to what you get on Super Tuesday. You know, and Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani and Fred Thompson could all, you know, take enough delegates on Super Tuesday that we end up not knowing who our nominee is or having one or two people who are trying to claim victory.
Now, the same thing could happen on the Democrat side, right? Because their rules are, in that respect, are somewhat similar, right?
Their rules are somewhat similar, and, you know, I think that that would have been more likely probably 6 months ago. I think that we will find after Iowa and on the way into New Hampshire that there are really only two people to fight over delegates, and that's going to be Obama and Hillary. and one of them will sweep up enough on Super Tuesday that, you know, with any luck, we'll be able to see Hillary Clinton conceding, because I don't think she's as easy to beat in the general as Barack Obama.
Now, so your pick for Iowa is Obama on and Huckabee? Is that what you're saying, Huckabee and Obama?
I think Obama will squeak out first, and Hillary will be a close second. It won't be a humiliating loss for her. So it'll be close, and then everybody will be, you know, status quo going into New Hampshire and Super Tuesday. I think Huckabee will pull out a Pat Robertson win in Iowa and then be defeated big time going forward.
In New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, then in New Hampshire, I guess anything could happen. You could have Romney. You could have McCain, who seems, you know, to be rising quite a bit.
If McCain comes in second, I think it's a whole new ball game, and I think that takes Giuliani off the table in a lot of ways, and I think that it takes you know, I think it makes it a North versus South thing in the Republican Party, and a, you know, center versus right thing in our party, and we may end up with one or two people on Super Tuesday who, you know, fight it out through the summer.
Well, we're going to have you back. We're going to have you back quite a few times.
Sure, you bet.
Because this is so much fun to talk about these things.
I know, we're getting down to the good stuff now.
We really
are.
Really
exciting,
so,
yeah.
So I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a lot of success with your second book, with your business, and we will call on you again, Elizabeth. It's so much fun to talk to you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, too. And Merry Christmas to you, and Happy New Year's to you and to all of your listeners. And thanks so much for having me on.
It's a real treat, and we'll have you back again. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was she's known to a lot of us as Media Lizzie. She's an author. She's a pundit. She's a very interesting lady, as you can see. We always enjoy having her on the show. And now we're going to switch gears a little bit here and talk to our friend Rick Moran. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Hey, Silvio. Sorry I'm a little late. I got caught up in my in that post I was telling you about.
Yeah, well, listen, you really, in fact, you probably didn't hear what Elizabeth or Media Lizzie said about the possibility of a broker convention. Like me, it's still probably less than 50%, but it is certainly more real than it's ever been. And you really, you know, I was thinking about a convention, a broker convention, or as I call it, a real convention, because that's the way they used to be.
Yeah.
You know, and then I saw your post, and I said, man, you're onto something here. I haven't read your second one, unfortunately, but
put it on the blog, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see that one. But, man, I think it's so interesting what you're proposing. I mean, what – I didn't read the second one. What are you saying in the second one?
Oh, well, you might recall, one of the things that is just not talked about yet, and it's probably not going to matter much because, as you say, there's less than a 50% chance that that there's going to be a brokered convention. But at the moment, 136 delegates from five states are not going to be sat because of the fact that Michigan, New Hampshire, Florida, Wyoming, and South Carolina are all holding their primaries or caucuses before February 5th, which was the mandated date set by the Republican National Committee. Those states are in violations of that rule, and according to the rules, Rule 16 is the rule number, they are penalized by losing 50% of their delegates. Now, what happens? You get to the convention. You have a brokered convention. What do you think? What do you think will happen to those delegates, boy?
It'd be fun.
Yeah,
it would be fun.
Rather than, you know, I'm just right now. I think realistically, with a brokered convention, if we have such a thing, there is going to be a huge effort at unity, at trying to come up with some kind of unity. I mean, a huge effort. The momentum will be for unity. I think the possibility of floor fights are there, but I think in the end this whole idea of unity you know will win out. The only party that's committed suicide in our lifetimes has been the Democratic Party in 1968 and 72.
Yes, right there in your city.
Yeah, but 72 also to some extent. And ever since then, you know, there have been, you know, knockdown, drag 'em out fights for the nomination that split the parties. You know, I'm thinking specifically now, maybe the Democrats in 76.
Oh, the Republicans in 76.
Yeah, well, probably.
Yeah, with Reagan and Ford, yeah.
But there was also a tremendous effort made to bring the two sides together. And, you know, and so I think the momentum is always for that. And for that reason, I don't think with a brokered convention you're going to have much blood on the floor, so to speak.
No, but, and as I always say, they're not going to be smoking cigars anymore. They'll be drinking bottled water, you know, and it'll be so different than they used to be, the smoke-filled rooms, because nobody smokes cigars anymore. So it'll be a totally different environment. But now, if you have a unity convention like that, and I agree with you, that's probably what will happen, then somebody like McCain could really emerge, because he's kind of maybe the one guy who can call the hold more factions together. You know, I don't know.
Well, I don't think McCain appeals much to the religious right at all, and he's made a lot of fiscal conservatives mad at him. So, you know, he's got the national security vote. The problem with McCain is that his appeal is actually more to Democrats and independents, which, by the way, I heard Lizzie, I don't want to disagree with her, but I think McCain is going to win New Hampshire. He's already in second place. If he gets within 5 points of Romney, I think the independent and Democratic vote that's going to cross over will put him over the top. So watch it. If he gets within 5 points of Romney, I think he's going to win it.
Well, he is. According to the Rasmussen poll today, he's like, I think 31-27. I could be wrong. Maybe it's 33-27, but I thought it said 31-27. So he's catching up quite a bit.
Yeah, he's on the rise. Now, his problem is money. He had, because of his problems with money back in the spring and summer, he had to now take federal matching funds rather than being able to raise however much money he can possibly do. You know, because there are limits now. He's got limits that other candidates are not held to. And I think even if he does win New Hampshire, you know, he's going to be facing Super Tuesday, 21 primaries, you know, with just not much money at all. He can't, you know, where's he going to compete, you know?
Well, he would have to compete on just name recognition, I guess.
That's
but that's
just
not
about
enough.
That can only
go so far. Well, I wanted to chat with you because you really caught my curiosity with those posts. And, you know, it's so fascinating to think about having a convention like that, especially now with the 24/7 news. I mean, it would be like a dream, I guess, for the cable news. And you got C-SPAN running the whole thing. I mean, with talk radio, can you imagine the kind of coverage that such a convention would get? I mean, it would be...
Sure. I think the over-the-air networks would probably go gavel to gavel, especially on some, you know, a day or two where, you know, they were going to vote. Because, you know, it just you're just looking at something so unprecedented. It hasn't really, really happened, I wouldn't say 100 years. I mean, there have been conventions in the 20th century that I think went to two or three ballots, but for the most part, it wasn't those weren't considered brokered conventions. That's just the way conventions were back then. You had
That's right. You had
five or six favorite sons, which I'm going to get into with my next blog post. Have a few favorite sons nominated, and what you know, and they'll be you know they control certain amount of delegates, and they wheel and deal with the candidates for their support, and you know that's just the way things used to be, and it wasn't really brokered in the sense that there was you know a chance that they wouldn't come up with a nominee. I mean, you go back to before the Civil War, Democratic conventions had 40, 50, 60 votes, and that's how you got presidents like Franklin Pierce. And James Buchanan, you know, these guys out of nowhere, these political hacks who never did anything in their lives, you know, getting to be president just because people were tired and they wanted to go home.
Well, another, that's also how some vice presidents got in. Like, wasn't Truman pretty much brought in that way? And Lincoln, to some extent, was a multi-ballot, wasn't he? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah,
100%,
yeah. Lincoln got smart. Basically, you had three major candidates in 1860, William Seward, who ended up, being Secretary of War, I believe? Secretary of War, I think. And then you had, Secretary of State, sorry. And then you had the Secretary of War, and Stanton, that's right, Edwin Stanton. And then you had Abraham Lincoln. And Lincoln, I think, won on the second or third ballot. He had people running around wrapping up endorsements and on the floor in Chicago. It was the first convention in Chicago. And he had it wrapped up, I think, on the second or third ballot. He did end up giving all of his major competitors cabinet posts.
Well, that's a pretty good way of taking
including
care of people.
Stanton, Seward, and all the major candidates that were opposing him got cabinet posts. So.
Well, I tell you, Rick, it's fascinating where you're going with this. I really love it, and I'm gonna, I always check your blog anyway, but you've given me now 10 more reasons to check it because it's so fascinating what you're doing. Keep it up, and take it to its conclusion. For those of us who are this is I hate to use the analogy. I mean, I use it with all due respect because I know it's a serious subject. But it's almost in Spanish TV they have these things called telenovelas, where
uh-huh.
it's like a soap opera, but it's even better than a soap opera, where they just go on for a long, long time, and that's what this is like. I mean, you're really keeping us going, so
yeah,
don't
well,
stop.
I'll tell you, Sylvia, it's like working without a net. Trust me. It's like, because I don't know where this thing's going. I have no clue.
Let your imagination,
exactly.
sit in front of that computer and just let your fingers take you wherever they take you, because
exactly.
I'm telling you, wherever it goes, people like me are going to have a lot of fun reading it.
I'm
because
glad.
I think it's great. But listen, Merry Christmas to you and to your family. We'll chat, I'm sure, next year. Heck, we never know. You may be in Minnesota? That's not too far from you. You may be up there in Minneapolis live blogging one of these broker conventions.
It very well could happen that way.
All right. Merry Christmas, Rick. It's great talking
you
to you, and Happy New Year as well.
Okay, you too, Sylvia. You take
Thank
it
you
easy
very now. Much. All right, well, that was Rick Moran. Of course, everybody is familiar with Rick. He has his own radio show here and also has a wonderful website called Right Wing Nut House that I absolutely love, and he's writing about the idea of a broker convention, and I just think it's so fascinating that because, it probably won't happen. I mean, I think Rick probably agrees with me on that. It's probably less than 50% that it will happen, but you never know. You never know. You never know what, remember 6 months ago Hillary Clinton was the invisible nominee, so you never know. You never know what these things are. We got about 6 minutes left on the show, and there's a person here from area code 228 I'm not familiar with. Let's see. Hello, this is Silvio Canto. Where are you calling from? Where's 228? Hello? Are you there? Well, I guess not. I guess 228 is not with us, or... Let me try it again. Let me push the button here. There's a call on hold from 228? I guess not. All right. Well, anyway, sorry about that, folks, but I thought that we had a call here. But this is we're going to wrap it up. This is Silvio Canto, December 19th, and we had a lot of fun talking to Mitya Lizzi and to Rick Moran about the politics. And as I said, on Friday the 21st, we're going to have a different type of show. On Friday the 21st, we're going to be talking to Rick Johnson, who has an organization in the West Coast. And what he does is that he works with men like me who have sons, who have fathers, and he works with us in trying to make us better fathers. And that's something that we should all be, or at least try to be, especially as we're heading into the Christmas season. And he also works with single mothers who are raising boys, as I said before, that's a real challenge in our society today. So we'll be talking to Rick Johnson on Friday, That'll be the last show of the year. And then after that, after the first of the year, we'll come back with a lot of politics, because as you could tell from our two guests, I think 2008 is going to be a year of surprises. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises in the coming campaign. So have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto signing off, and we'll see you Friday on the 21st. Bye-bye.